Welcome to Reinvented, the Agent Lounge with Steve Colino and Trevor James. We dive into residential real estate and make sense of where the market's going. This isn't just another real estate podcast. It's like joining us in the Agent Lounge for conversations by active industry pros. Let's get started. All right, everybody. Well, thank you so much for being here. We're looking forward to the very first episode of Reinvented, the Agent Lounge with Steve Colino and myself. Today, we have a wonderful guest, Matt Kuchar from Shoami. Very excited to see you, Matt. But as this is the first episode, and of course, we all know each other well, but I'd like to kind of go around the room and we can introduce ourselves to the audience. So I'd like to pass the ball to the guest first, Matt. So why don't you take it away?
Sure. Thanks for having me today. Matt Kuchar, the founder of Shoami. We're an on-demand showing service for real estate agents.
Perfect. And Steve, why don't you take it away?
Yeah. Steve Colino, I'm based in Chicago, have a unique business, real estate agent, 13 states, 5 different brokers. You'll get to know a little bit more as we go through here. But yeah, that's about it.
Great. Love it. Love it. And my name is Trevor. I have worked at Zillow and Coldwell Banker, launched some national coaching programs, and I'm the founder of Modern Agent Coaching and Consulting. The point of Agent Lounge and Reinvented is just to kind of what we were seeing, and Steve and I were having these conversations, and we started talking for like 30, 40, 50 minutes at a time about where we saw the future of real estate. And it just got to the point that we were like, we need to just record this and get this out to people, because I feel like there's some good nuggets that we need to share with everybody. So that's why we're here. Whether or not you're listening in your car and through audio or you're watching us on YouTube, we really appreciate it. And if you have any questions or insight, definitely reach out and let us know. We'd love to answer your questions. But today we're going to dive into the future of real estate, talk a little bit about the buyer's broker agreement. I think we're all a little bit saturated on hearing about it, but I do want to hear both of your takes on it, of course, and then the impact of prop tech and AI, how that's all coming down the pipeline. And then we'll talk about a few predictions of where we see the industry going and you know, hear about what we think as individuals for the future of real estate. So, you know, first off, talking about these buyer broker agreements and, you know, BBA and, you know, of course, Sitzer versus Burnett coming down the pipeline this summer. So I'd love to hear either Steve or Matt kind of from your perspective in your business, have you seen anything change? Have you seen agents kind of in an uproar? I know everybody thought this was going to kill the industry. I don't think it has yet, but I'd be curious.
Yeah, Matt, if you go ahead and start, I have a different opinion on this too, but I'd love to hear what you have to say from your end.
Sure. So I think the thing is, in different locations, agents have been doing this for a long time. They've had agency. And I'm also, as founder of Shoami, I'm also a real estate agent in both Colorado and Florida. And we have always used buyer agreements. I think the big shift with the NAR settlement is when you get it signed and making it mandatory. So that's where I think the biggest shift is it used to be common practice that you'd have a conversation about agency with your buyer and with the understanding that if we decided to work together, we would at that point enter into a more formal relationship. So it was disclosed and then go into the agreement. The settlement has kind of forced the agents, at least the NAR agents, I think the listeners are probably aware, but we need to be clear, not every person that's a licensed real estate agent is a member of NAR. I am a member of NAR, but not everybody is.
Of course.
They, you know, now the buyer has to sign this before going and seeing a home. The thing that I've also realized is there are many different types of agreements. Every state has their own agreement. Different brokerages have their own agreements. What they say, what they tie the buyer into. Oh, so, you know, I think it's good. I think the making sure that the person understands the person being shown a home or entering into this relationship understands the terms of what they're entering into. Some of the struggles are, I don't necessarily agree that you have to do it before seeing a home. Obviously, Zillow has come up with their model of, hey, go see a home for free, kind of a try before you buy. That's been really popular for Zillow. But
Yeah, that's how I see it. I feel like I've been so, I just took it for granted being from Colorado, like you said. It's just always been something, you know, I meet someone, they come into the office, we have a good conversation. I might show them one condo and then I'm like, okay, if you want me to be your agent, here's what that looks like. We have that discussion and we move forward. It never felt like something that needed to upend the entire industry. And frankly, to me, it was always like, okay, you know, in Colorado and seeing the cost of homes just continually rise, 6% just never really seemed fair to be the standard. And I guess from the consumer standpoint, if I was a consumer and just seeing like 6%, 6%, 6%, 6%, it does feel like a price fixing situation at that point, right? So it's about empowering the consumer in different ways. But, you know, Steve, I think we both agree on that, right?
Yeah. And I could add to this. So yeah, as you guys will learn, the audience will learn, and you guys know I'm very consumer centric in everything I do, from business models when I started in 2017. Everything I have learned through coaching, through some expensive coaching, and just through life is you need to meet the consumer's needs. You need to listen to what they have, what they want, and then create a system and a product to support what they want. And I think that's what we've been so used to, being in the system of the 5 to 6%. And even though it was always negotiable, the consumer may not have known that or felt that, right? So there have always been flat fee companies and different limited service. I take part in that. I am a managing broker of a variety of different brokerages, from builders to flat fee companies to 100% brokerages, even as we talk here today. I think one of the biggest things was, like, my home state is Illinois, so that's where I've been licensed the longest. We always were told we should do a buyer's agreement, but really people didn't do the buyer's agreement.
Right.
It was that thing. They just fell. But I know, I think I heard the stat that like 18 states have been doing it when the NAR settlement hit. So
right.
18 states weren't affected at all. But I think I'm going to spin this a little different because I see it different. And for those folks who don't know so much about me, I'm heavy in the listings across 13 states. I've been one of the top listing agents in America for the last 4 years, really. And I see a little different part of this now. Can we do our predictions yet, or are we saving that for later? I got a good
We can save our predictions for later. For
yeah, I'm going to save the prediction for later. But what I have noticed being a listing agent, because I felt the exact opposite. So imagine having hundreds and hundreds and more than that listings across multiple states. NAR settlement comes out, it puts a lot of panic into the agent who have never done a buyer agency agreement. We all saw it on Facebook,
right,
media,
right,
responding. I felt the exact opposite. I was like, oh crap, they're telling everybody to call the listing agent to find out the staff. So I panicked the opposite way. But what ended up happening, I think it's the part that nobody talked about until it happened. And then it changed really quick for me too, is in some of the brokerages I'm in, one of them's a limited service brokerage. But when EXP came out and they said, we're no longer doing broker to broker. That's immediately what we did. We sat down with the CEO of the company I worked for in 11 states and we're like, there's no reason to do broker to broker. There seems to be a conflict there for us. If you're a listing agent, limited service or full fiduciary, I have a duty to get the most money for my client.
And let's back up a little. What do you mean by broker to broker?
So broker to broker. So we've always done it broker to brokers. It's 6%, we'll just say as an example.
Sure.
6%, it's always been split, say 3 and 3. Technically, all 6% the old way used to
go. Oh, right.
And then paid to the broker. But what has happened was EXP and Real were really two of the first companies that came out with this right after August 17th. We then adapted it too, was we no longer do broker to broker. So meaning we're not going to ask our seller what amount they're giving the buyer's agent, because in theory, the buyer's broker should already have that negotiated before the showing.
Oh, it's just completely separate. It's not even something we're considering as your listing agent, basically.
Right. Yeah. Well, we don't want to get in the middle of that, because if I work with a seller and they're going to offer 3% to the buyer's agent, but that buyer broker's only got a 1.5%, I'm losing money. I have a fiduciary to my seller.
Well, so you're showing them those net sheets though, right? And saying, here's what it looks like in this scenario versus paying the full 3%.
Well, yeah, well, we want to show them everything, but we don't want to. I don't. When this came out and you're a listing agent highlighting only the listings, really the buyer should already have something in place. And I get why they're calling us. They're trying to see if it'll be covered, but we don't want our seller, my seller, to overpay the buyer's agent.
Yeah.
Right? Like to offer more, because I have a fiduciary to a lot of these clients.
Right.
So some of that came out that I wasn't expecting. Like we talked about it for months. We were setting it up for months. And then when August 17th happened, all of a sudden you saw the EXPs of the world pull back. That's going to be my future thing we're going to talk about later. That's going to be one of the things I lean into. Yeah, I hope that makes sense. But that was part of it, that of that whole agreement that kind of wasn't prepared for. And then all of a sudden we had to adapt really quick.
So do we feel like overall, yes, it's only been a couple of months and I think most of us were pretty used to it, but has this new process, you know, you talked about, I don't have the labor to filter through all these buyer's agents' inquiries, you know, so does this make things, does it add friction to your process? Have you had to redo the recipe on how you service all these hundreds of listings at one time?
Well, that's why we are actively working on, obviously I've used Matt's company for many years. And, because I'm licensed in 13 states based in Chicago, one of the ways when we work with more listings, but if we do have a existing client who used us on a listing, we do help them buy. And that's when we have used like Matt's service for sure across multiple states, because I can get in any metro market, kind of like Uber. I always say it's like Uber for real estate, but I can get a licensed agent to help open that door as a showing assistant in any metro basically in the country now, pretty darn quick, you know, for as low as like $50. So it's pretty amazing using his system to do that. But we're also trying to build that nationwide network, as you guys know, of agents. So we have people who more know us, you know, like know us, know our business model, know our plans. But in general, for me, being a listing agent, one of the reasons I never liked working with buyers before, this is just me personally, it was time. It's to me, it's easier to do a listing. If you can get the listing, it's easier to do the listing. Buyers can run you ragged, we know. And I just didn't have the patience for buyers in the past, but also because I didn't have a written agreement, it probably, now I look at it going, this is just like a listing. So you watch, I'll start doing more buyer side in Chicago.
Well, I'm excited to see that, you know, kind of the buyer's game with us. It's a monster, you know.
It's like an agreement. It's like a listing to me now. It's a presentation. And you're in advance. So to me, now the industry has kind of come to what I'm like, not good at, but what I'm experienced with.
Well, you've got to showcase your value, right? And it's putting it on its head because I mean, yes, I worked for Zillow, but I will say the Premier Agent system, I think, is part of the reason why the Sitzer Burnett case came down the pond in the first place. Because if you can go on Zillow, find your own home, ask somebody to just literally open a door. And then you'd see these conversations online, right? Like, I asked my realtor how much I should offer, and she said, I have no clue. And it's like, okay, well, I guess I'll just offer list price and hope I get the home. And my lender's already, you know, I went on Rocket Mortgage and got a pre-approval. So why is she worth the 2.5%, 2.83%, you know, versus somebody like yourself or like me or like Matt, who is going to show you these homes, who's going to listen to what you need, who might have some listings in the wings or have some sellers who are just waiting for the right buyer, you know, people who are serious about finding the right home for you.
Welcome back. Now, let's introduce our company and guest for this episode, Matt Kuchar from Show On Me. We'll be exploring how showing homes is evolving in today's real estate landscape. Stay tuned for an insightful discussion.
I do want to take a minute and give some credence to our guest today, Matt, and I'd love to hear your elevator pitch on Show On Me. And for our listeners who may not know about the amazing work that your company does, please enlighten all of us.
Yes. Thanks. We're up to 155,000 agents now. So actually 1 in 10 of the real estate agents in the United States. We've scheduled over 300,000 showings to date. And it really started out as a product for an agent, for myself, right? I was solving my own problem. I'm busy. I actually tried to take a day off and go skiing. And that day, you know, somebody wanted to go see a home. So I'm doing what every other...
As it always happens. It's as soon as you go on vacation, the phone rings.
Exactly. That's the realtor rule. If you want to get busy, schedule a vacation.
Exactly.
You're going to double. It's just the way it works. And so tried to find an agent. Eventually I did, but then we had this awkward conversation. Am I paying you? Are we sharing? Am I getting a percentage? And I'm like, no, I've been working with these people for years. I just need a door opened. And right. So I paid $100, wrote the contract that night. And then, you know, the rest is kind of history. Having a beer with a friend in a restaurant and seriously, like on a napkin, drew this thing out, Uber for Realtors. Later on, what we're seeing is it's starting. They're like, hey, can you do open houses? Hey, can you get somebody over to take some pictures? Right. By the way, I need a property report. Can you tell me, you know, does the carpet, you know, need to be replaced? Does the walls need to be painted? So you're seeing anything that you need boots on the ground to do, that's what our agents are now getting the opportunity to do. And so for the busy agent, it's leverage, right? It's peace of mind. I don't have to be at every showing. In the past, also, like I was in Denver and I would have people who wanted to buy in Boulder or, you know, Longmont. It's a 2-hour drive. I'm not going to drive up there. I would refer that out. I was capable of selling the home,
right?
Yeah. I just need somebody to open the door and I can handle it. And so many times I've handed off referrals and it didn't work out. They either didn't like the person or the person really didn't do that good of a job. I could have done a better job in Denver than they did, you know, in Boulder. So agents are using it for a lot of different things as we go. In the last year or two, other industries and parts of our industry have taken notice and are starting to go like, hey, could your agent show a rental home? Hey, could they do a rental open house? We're going to send 5 people through in this half an hour. We just need somebody there during that time to open the door and make sure nothing gets stolen. Can we get somebody to, you know, I'm an inspection company. I need these.
Oh, yeah.
Some appraisal company. So now you're seeing more and more this breadth of users who see this resource and they're like, yes, you know, we would love to have somebody because it's too expensive. If you had, let's say you're trying to move into the state of Texas and you're nationwide and you have to pay somebody full time for maybe a few hours of work, it just doesn't work. So the ad hoc or the, you know, on-demand services, there's definitely a need for that.
Especially for agents who are licensed in multiple states like yourself, Steve.
Can I add a little bit onto it just because we've been using it, I don't, maybe 4 years. I mean, it's early. You had a lot less agents then. I don't remember that.
They didn't get picked up as fast as they do now.
Yeah, it was, the growth is amazing. But because I was on the listing side, I started using it on the listing side, even though back then there wasn't that many people doing different things with it yet. But I've had, I use it all the time. All my listings I get in Minnesota where I get listings from a big institutional client, I have to walk the property and I need to visually see it. So we go on there and have them FaceTime us from it so I can visually see the property. And now I go back to the same agent. So you'll see I keep paying the same agent because they're the ones walking those properties for me. Because it goes, you got that system where it'll go out to the one agent first or preferred agent. And so yep. We build a relationship there. We've done that. I've had inspections where I just needed somebody to take a picture. Like an inspector's like, yeah, final inspection. You just need under the sink plumbing, one photo. And the inspector didn't want to get the house.
Yeah,
they just wanted the picture. And I'm like, I don't live there. So I go, they take a picture. We send it to an inspector.
It's an expensive picture.
A lot of locks. I had, we had a lot of listings down south in the kind of the Sun Belt last year from a big client. And we would run into issues where agents forgot to put the key back. So unfortunately, I had to use it when I got a complaint that there was a key missing. My client's not there because they're a big institutional client running thousands of properties from Texas. So we would use it for that. It's a lifesaver, honestly. It's changed my whole business of when we wanted to become a true virtual agent. We had some limitations and then all of a sudden we found your service and we don't have those limitations now. I can get, I can get somebody to a house licensed to be in a house within an hour usually. So it's amazing.
It's fantastic. So yeah. Listeners, if you haven't checked it out yet, Shawami is free to sign up. And brokers, there is a special, it's a black label, platinum label option for brokers.
Yeah. Where they can group their agents and the showings go to the agents within their office and everything. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So we just wanted to give you, you know, some time to speak on ShowOnMe. I love it. I mean, I used it when you launched in Denver like 5.5 years ago, and I was pretty broke and just needed to find ways that I could make money in real estate, you know, and hey, it was $50. I walked a couple of blocks, opened up a door, showed some buyers a house, you know, it was cool. It was a nice luxury condo, you know, going to see a nice place. So that was cool. And then I did use it to show a home up in Longmont when I had a buyer that was in Boulder. And I was like, it's raining. I'm not going to drive 2.5 hours from Highlands Ranch to Longmont. I'm not doing it. Not worth the like $75 for sure. So
one day, that's a lot in it for the showing agent, right? So oftentimes you're like, okay, it's a filler for their time. They've got the availability. They build relationships with other real estate agents. They get market knowledge. They get showing experience. You know, so there's more than just the pay to go open a door, right? There's more to it than that. And quite honestly, that's where we see this. Think of Starbucks. When you walk into Starbucks, it's an experience, right? You're not just paying for a coffee. You're paying for this, you know, smell, the smile of the barista, the taste of the coffee. It's everything, the music. We want eventually, that's what the experience we want. When somebody, a ShowOnMe agent shows a home, like it's an experience for that person. And it's a good experience. Even if they're not meeting a person, it's a good experience. So agent quality, that's like our big number one thing right now. We are dialed in on making sure that it's a good experience for.
Now we're into the QA. Now we've got too many agents, so we need to start weeding them out. You know what you should do is you should start offering, like at the end of the year, be like, you know, the ShowOnMe Awards, you know, and be like, oh, you showed, you know, you were the top shower in your state, you know, congratulations, you know.
I think you had the most positive reviews.
Yeah, you can have ChatGPT generate little badges for them, and then they could put it up on their social media. Agents love that, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yep. Good ideas. See, that's, I come on these shows, so I get ideas like that, take it back to the team, and they're like, we got so many ideas.
Right. That's the problem. Right? It's always so many ideas. And then it's like executing them is the tough part. So great. Well, I think that bleeds well into our next topic, which is on prop tech and AI in real estate.
Quick break ahead, but don't go anywhere. Up next, we're diving into prop tech and AI in real estate. How are these technologies reshaping the way agents do business? Stay with us.
Of course, ShowOnMe is very tech forward platform that we couldn't have had 20 years ago. But I'd be curious to kind of hear both of your take on, you know, AI, you know, prop tech specifically. You know, coming from the iBuying world, I got so excited thinking about the future of real estate and what could be if we could transact things fully digitally. And I think we got close at Zillow. We did. But it was too far removed from the agents. And so that taught me that agents are just such a vital piece, and that more than most sales, that real estate is so much more emotional than you would ever even imagine it is. And I think that's what's interesting about these tech platforms coming into play, is it removes the emotion. And, you know, Steve, you work so much more, I guess you could kind of say, on balance sheets and statements and numbers than I think the majority of agents in the business. But as someone who still sees institutional investors, how much emotion plays into those deals? Is it still present? Is it available? Is it something that you have to consider when you're taking these meetings?
Yeah. So we see it different, right? So we're very consumer centric. So we want to really honor the best way the consumer wants to transact the transaction. So not lead them into it's very different than sales, right? It's an advisory role. You're trying to give them more options than any other agent in the marketplace. So there's no selling that, because you have an option for them, right? And when you give them that option, there are some people, and this is what I think I recognized earlier than most was, and honestly, part of recognizing when we put our business model together in 2017 was something called, and a lot of people don't know it, and I just saw an article on it 2 days ago for the first time in like 5 years, but the 2015 NAR Danger Report was a report that NAR created back in 2015 with the biggest threats to the industry, threats to the brokerages, to the MLSs, to agents.
Right.
We kind of backtracked and created a bit. I used that as my market data because I was just starting 2017. We used that as our market data to create a business around the biggest threats, right? So some of that, along with knowing back then, 2017, there was a guy in Texas, and Trevor, you've heard me say the story, but there's a guy in Texas that I knew, learned about, doing 4,600 transactions. He was in the Guinness Book of World Records. And I was like, how is this guy doing 4,700 transactions and everyone else is averaging 4 or 5? So I gravitated to that. I reached out. I was trying to figure out going, I want to be that guy. And so I basically built the model around that. But in those kind of models, you're catering to people who don't necessarily want or need all the services of a full service broker, right? They might already be licensed. Like even last year, I sold a bunch of houses, 208 houses in about a 4 or 5 month period for one client. That one client was already a broker. They're just, their own staff wasn't prepared to sell that many houses.
Right. I remember this. Right.
Yeah. They're a big, big, like single family REIT. And they were so used to acquiring houses for all those years. And then all of a sudden inflation kicks in and they get a little nervous. This is about 18 months ago now. They get nervous and they just need to sell stuff and their staff wasn't prepared. But yet we have that reach. We're in 10 different states at that time, 40 some MLSs, and we can put listings up. So just meeting the needs of the consumers and not assuming that you have, that what you sell fits everybody, right? It's just a different perspective. So I don't know if that answered that question.
I think it does a little bit. And like, because I've been, as a coach, one of the biggest things I talk about is a menu of services, that everybody is not going to want everything. And if you give people the option, they might opt for that 7% rate, you know, or, you know, whatever that looks like for you. So it's, you know, I sit down with sellers and say, well, you know, for 2%, this is what I'm going to do for you. For 3%, I'm also going to buy the moving boxes for you and set up your movers, you know, and pay for your U-Haul. And what else can you offer these people, you know? And so it's above and beyond that. So when you talked about a menu or kind of the various options that people have, I think it's important for agents to keep in mind that it's like your business is adaptable to your consumer and what they want.
Yeah. Let me add on to that real quick. So in this, he actually, the person I'm thinking of might be a great guest for a show down the road. Right now I use a platform where you can go on there right now, enter the address, and it gives 4 different valuations, right? Just the online valuations back inside your own back office, your own account. And then it gives 4 different cash offers, a true cash offer, lease backs, all this stuff, 4 different offers. And then you hit one more button and it gives them 4 different ways to list their house, all within a matter of 20 seconds of entering your address. Well, I don't even know your email yet. Like it's gives it to you immediately. We're not trying to make you go.
I love it.
My software, I didn't create it. It's a company we can highlight later, but like, that's what I've implemented. But when I see something like that, I'm like, that fits my need. I want to give the consumer all the options immediately. They don't want to wait. They don't want you to call them. They want it now. And if you can meet that need quicker, faster, more conveniently, that's what people want nowadays. That's why we're all watching Netflix and this, and Blockbuster doesn't exist anymore, right? It's just simpler, easier, and it's delivered the way they want it. I order McDonald's more for my 12-year-old. She's 12 now, and have it delivered than I do go pick it up anymore. Right? Like I just pay the extra
delivery. We got to love it, you know?
So
it's all about convenience. Yeah. That's, I think, a huge point. And that's why I got so excited when it's for iBuying, you know, and thought, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. And I think iBuying still has its place in the market for those buyers or sellers who might want to use it, of course. But I don't know. I mean, it's such a changing world so rapidly, you know? So I think I do want to talk a little bit about AI in terms of market predictions. And you kind of talked about these 4 different numbers that would spit out, you know, and one of my favorite companies based out of Denver, Homebot, does a lot of that, you know, and it's got their algorithm that spits out a number. And so
you can get all these numbers, right? Like you can get your Zestimate and your HomeBot number and your Zoodelio number and your cash offer number. But as an agent, how do you come together and show them, okay, these are the options that you can get, but what numbers do they actually need to be showing them? Like I want our listeners to know, should it be days on market? What should they be presenting to their sellers to show them, here's why this option makes sense, here's why this option makes sense, here's how you can leverage this way? You know, let's kind of talk them through that a little bit.
So I'll share a little bit, a couple of prop tech companies that I've been working with or are familiar with in the AI space. They offer many different things to the buyers and to the sellers, right? We'll write contracts. We'll give you your home valuations. We'll write your description. We'll take your photo, you name it, right? The AI could do almost anything. We'll create a video.
Yeah, with right. So why don't I FSBO, right? Like,
you know what the number one thing that they wanted and that they didn't trust the machine to do? Give it its value. Yeah. That was, of all the spots and the buttons and all the things that their AI can do, the number one thing is they wanted a local agent to go tell them what that thing was, what that property was worth, you know? And I think that's where, you know, because my home right next to the one right across the street is a different value. They back to a very busy road that gets a lot of road noise. I'm right across the street. It's quiet. My backyard has a nice, lots of trees, and I don't hear the noise. You aren't going to know that through an algorithm. I mean, maybe they're getting to the point where they can figure that stuff out, but that's where the agent value is still going to come in. AI can do a lot of it, right? It can get close, but it's that last mile, it's that last inch that they still want. The consumer at this point is still wants a human to tell them it's okay.
That's the human aspect that's so weird that you would think an algorithm could take days on market into effect or something like that. But it's so true. You know, I mean, when I was at Zillow and it was like, we had a finance guy who looked at all these homes, you know, unfortunately he had never been in the Denver area and didn't know the neighborhoods. And when you think about there are roughly 19,000 different neighborhoods in the United States, being able to draw those lines gets really tough really quick. And then you get these micro neighborhoods within a neighborhood, right? And it's like, this one cul-de-sac of homes was actually built like 5 years later after everything else. It's actually worth a little bit more. But the AI has no way of knowing that whatsoever, you know? And it just gets so weird.
You get to a big city, I'm in Chicago-ish suburb, yeah. But it changes block by block. It's one of the areas, like when I told you we're trying to build a nation, well, I'm pointing to my map, but it's not there because of my, we're trying to build a nationwide network of agents is because of that, right? The one thing I can be licensed in a bunch of states, be able to service a certain type of client, right? But there's still a lot of clients, you have to get them that last mile. We're using some of that AI tools, definitely the valuations, which we don't trust either. And the cash offers, which we know they're not going to take, is a lead magnet. We're trying to get the list, ultimately. But if that works, we do get paid before we list it, but it's 5% of the time. It's going to be very small. So we're doing it as a way to just get them to trust us. We have options for you. But one of our options is, even though I'm not local, I have an expert in your neighborhood and that's what we're trying to build now, like in my own business, because I haven't completed the circle yet, right? I've gotten good at this part. I now got to get better at all of it, right? And I need those agents on the ground. I think they said in almost all businesses, it is that last mile, right? Like it's some of the thoughts and concepts you can do things, but it's always that last mile to the consumer that is the toughest part.
Well, that's where all these SaaS companies come in, right? They're the glue. They try to be that middleman, you know, that's where they always make that money. So is being that last mile, you know, I mean, maybe we'll see, you know, Elon Musk's like new robots, you know, those humanoid robots that came out. Matt, maybe some rich agent will buy one and start showing homes with that, you know, who knows? It's so intense. Who knows where it could be in 10 years? You know, I mean, 10 years ago.
He is. His people got a whole.
I know.
We're going to get a self-driving car to drive the robot out.
There you go.
The robot goes.
Right.
The car opens the door.
That's it.
I mean,
it's the taxi combo. You know, you get the smart taxi in there, you know, showing homes around. Oh my God. I love it. I love it. Well, it's just, you know, I was talking to someone earlier about how when I was working in downtown Denver in software sales, roughly 8 years ago. And it was like, I was like trudging to work in like 2.5 feet of snow and I hated it. And we had a coworker who lived in Boulder and she would commute to downtown Denver every day. And I was like, why do you do this? And, you know, whoever made the most sales that month would get a coupon that they could redeem to work from home one day, you know, on like a Friday, you know, and it was like the reward. And now we're all working from home, you know, and I think agents kind of took that for granted of being able to work from home. And now it's funny, I think agents are kind of leading the shift of going back into the office. On some of the Facebook groups I've seen, agents are so much more excited and they see the engagement of being in the office. And I think agents are this specific breed of people that are usually so extroverted that they need people to bounce things off of. So when we talk about AI-powered virtual tours or contracts, you know, where does that leave an agent who is just this innate human aspect? I mean, Matt, you're already talking about like a FSBO could show themselves at home and then they can get a, you know, range of numbers from AI, and then they could get a tech company to write the contract for them, you know, and all of this would probably be less than the 3%, you know, $15,000 you pay an agent. So I really, really want to hone in on the human aspect and the nature of it, as I think all of us got into this for a reason. And so I think that's a big part of real estate, is like we can remove it so far with AI and with technology, but there's always going to be the human aspect. So how can AI support agents instead of replacing them? Discuss.
I can start on this one a little bit, because it's funny, because a lot of people, the way I operate my business and the way I shifted through the pandemic, right, to be more of a virtual agent, some people are just like, so there's no human contact. There's no, and I'm like, no, there is. It's human connections is still what it's all about, right? I might not be connecting with that home seller because they didn't want me to. They wanted to be able to sell the house with less of an agent involvement. But the personal connections to the CEO, to the dispositions department, right? Acquisitions department, super critical. The reason we get that business is we're working those relationships on top of every aspect, because their needs are different. They don't need you to sit there and tell them how you're better than the next agent, how you're marketing the home, because they're not in the home either. And they don't necessarily care that I'm in the home, but they want to know that I'm on top of everything. When the calls come in, we're handling it. When we're scheduling a showing, offers are being presented quick, multiple offers are handled successfully. And it's all about kind of increasing the efficiency, right? Basically just removing friction from everything. I don't believe when you start playing with I'm pretty big adapter of, I mean, I'm using ChatGPT.
We both love ChatGPT. Yeah.
Every day. Like I can't imagine how people wouldn't use it every day, but
right.
And I only know a little part of it. Like it's just amazing. So even this backdrop was created in 20 seconds right before this. I asked.
And it spelled Agent Lounge correctly, which I was like, that's the most impressive part, you know.
First, it gave me a mic and then it gave me a table. And I'm like, remove mic, remove table, add couches. And I almost changed these pillows to a different color, but it's all within seconds, right? And that's just one ChatGPT. I use it all the time. I do it a lot on, it's amazing. Like I took years building a business model using something called the Blue Ocean Strategy, which we've talked about in private before. Years of trying to do it and this and that. And I could literally go to ChatGPT now. Anybody, any of our users could copy my business in a second. Just go to ChatGPT, say, create a consumer-centric business model using strategy of Blue Ocean, blah, blah, blah. Put some more things in and hit. And it'll literally give you a business model to implement within.
But it's all about the implementation, right? So
it is. There's a little more to it, but we're using it to, honestly, I still have the human aspect. I still have like 7 virtual assistants that help me on a daily basis, you know, rotating through the weekend, 7 days a week. But we use AI to enhance their job. We're not replacing them, but we're utilizing it in every aspect that we possibly can to try to basically get rid of that paperwork, get rid of the stuff that you don't, that can be handled by somebody way more efficient than us. Like if, when you look,
oh yeah,
stuff, it's just so much more efficient than a human. And it's the stuff that humans usually don't like doing. So
that's what I love about it. It's like, you know, I mean, I was looking at this article yesterday and I was like, this is some really good data, but it was hidden within images, right? So I couldn't highlight the data. It was like an infographic. So I just take a little snap, upload it to ChatGPT. I'm like, take all the data from this image so I can actually, you know, cut and paste it. And then it's like, okay, you know, and then I wanted to compare, contrast that with a few other articles I found and just literally just control A, the entire article, throw it into ChatGPT. Okay. Contrast these ideas. Tell me what I'm missing here so I don't have to read, you know, three different articles. And it's just a few bullet points. You know, I mean, it is. I was telling someone on a call today saying I really, truly believe ChatGPT is potentially the largest digital creation that I've seen in the last two decades. You know, I mean, I really, really do think that it has the potential to change so much. And people don't use it. I mean, we're early adopters, and I still feel like we barely use it for the
barely touch. We have no idea.
I mean, I don't use any code. I don't use it for coding or any of that. You know, I mean, I've built out numerous GPTs for my business, you know, so I've got one for, you know, writing follow-ups specifically. So I'll spit the transcript and the action items into there, and it'll write me a good follow-up email based on like certain things that we need to touch, you know, or, you know, being able to do it for your own business. And that's, I mean, I love that. If you guys haven't done it yet, make a ChatGPT for your own business. It is amazing. You just take your website, throw it in there, talk about what your vision and values are, what you do, you know, what's important to you as a business, and it'll give you much more tailored responses around what you should do. Really, really amazing stuff. So don't get me talking about ChatGPT or I'll talk about it all day long. But, you know, we're kind of running over a little bit, so I do want to pivot. I want to talk about what's one trend or tech that both of you think we'll see rapid adoption in the next 12 months, or, you know, let's do our predictions. I am curious to hear your predictions on what you're thinking. I know, Steve, you had one. So if you want to go first, feel free.
Yeah, I kind of led into it already, but I, to be honest with you, I've heard of multiple brokerages. Some coaches that I used to be coached by, I still follow. I'm not in their coaching anymore, but I still listen to them. I've heard them also say that they believe that this is where it's going. And I think living it out every day as a top listing agent, I do believe that broker to broker may go away someday. I ultimately think that's what the DOJ really probably wanted. But I
really,
yeah, I think they really want to decouple it. And we're not decoupled yet if you're doing broker to broker. It's still, so even the broker I'm in Chicago, I just moved my license here in Illinois to a top kind of luxury brand, top brand. They do broker to broker still because they're still that traditional. But then other side, you're seeing the. But I just think because of that fiduciary responsibility to your seller and the way it is, I think it's going to be truly decoupled. And I wouldn't be surprised if that happens in the next 12 months to 18 month time frame, where it's not even an option. Like, just everything needs to be between, you know, you need to have your agreement with your side of the parties and that's it, type of thing. You could still ask for credits and all that. That part won't go away, but the actual just disable the ability to do broker to broker. Then the sellers always only, because even now, like I'm in an office and they still, it's a modern office, but if I want to list anything below 5%, I've got to get permission of
right.
Magic broker, and they're probably not going to want to do it. That's still like,
right.
I think that's what the DOJ is desperately trying to get rid of. So that would be one of my ones that I've been thinking about in on my mind because of what's happening.
Well, it does feel like, you know, if you take into consideration the fact that we've got all of these tech tools, got all this technology to send the emails out. I mean, you know, I love Traxy, you know. I mean, you use Traxy, it'll keep your people updated automatically. I mean, you basically almost, you go under contract to make a couple calls, you're good. You know, and people were like, oh, I don't know how to balance four or five transactions at a time. And I'm like, well, it's about organization. But I mean, when we talk about being able to streamline so much of this, does it make sense to have as many agents going for 6%? I mean, like, we know that the majority of transactions last year and this year, something like 53, 54% of transactions were investors. So like you working with a lot of these investors see the reason to decouple this.
But on the opposite side, I think a lot of buyers can also feel as though it's just one more way that sellers who have already seen such astronomical gains can pull up the rung of the ladder behind them when they go to sell their home, you know, without compensating their agent.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, like, even though I think that's the way it's going because it's going to be forced that way, somebody like me, I've never had restrictions at any until the broker I just recently joined. I've never had restrictions. And I've worked for some big brands. I would not move or be recruited to them if they put a restriction on my business model. And maybe other people in the office didn't know I had that flexibility, but I had that flexibility. Years ago, you couldn't do a zero commission, but you could do $1. I've had people do $1. Does it make my life easy? No. Does it piss off the other agent and I got to take their calls? Yes. But we wouldn't restrict. We would never restrict a consumer if it was allowed by law. That was always our policy. So it's always been there, but not enough consumers knew or not enough agents were allowing to negotiate that, right? So it's...
Well, that's interesting because I think your point leads into the fact of everybody thinks real estate fees should be less. I think even some real estate agents can agree with that, that 6% seems too much in the day and age of being able to streamline so much, right? And you have to touch a transaction so much less. So it makes sense for 4% to be the new standard, just throwing out a number, 5%, whatever that might be.
Well, it depends on the value, right?
It does.
On a $100,000 home or a $50,000 home, that might not be the
right. Right. Right.
You know, but on a $2 million home, you know, it should be.
We've got some wiggle room.
Something right. Like that, right. And we're seeing the biggest shift, if I already call, say, the biggest shift in 2024 is the buyers trying with all their might to go directly to the listing agent to avoid, you know, a middleman, right? A buyer's agent.
Yeah.
We're seeing this, a call I had with the top, one of the top teams at KW today. And she's like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I have so many calls from buyers because they've got like 200 homes listed and everybody's calling.
And the buyers are fine doing dual agency because they're like, maybe I can just save some money. Right. Yeah.
That's what they think. And they don't, you know, and they don't know what the agreement is. Do they have an agreement if I sell it myself? Do I have a different agreement if I have to share it? You know, all of that stuff is a big change. So I think if you're looking a year in advance, you're going to see that trend, I think, accelerate more and more and more. I think also the way that the buyer agent gets paid, because as you're talking about this decoupling off the transaction for the buyer's agent, you're going to see how those agents get paid different, right? Because not everybody has, let's say, $10,000 to give their agent. Well, if you had to, I'll give you one industry, air conditioning, right? Bought an air conditioner recently. I was fortunate I was able to pay for it, but they were already with a contract that would put a lien against my house. That would
right. Yeah, those contractor liens are
interest,
real.
I'm going to, you know, they could pay by a credit card. Those are the things that all these other industries are used to doing that real estate agents are not. They get paid as closing, right?
Right.
So you're going to see these huge payment processing companies come in and start offering the buyer's agents different ways to get paid. It was never fair. Think about this. I could go out and I've got one buyer that never buys a home, but I show him 50 homes,
yep.
Right? And that happened because I worked both a buyer and a seller. And then I go out with one other person and they look at
one. And they buy the first home, right? Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so in that sense, I'm spreading my costs, right? Because time is money. My time is worth a certain amount. I'm spreading that amongst someone that never even does a transaction with me. Is that fair to the other guy that, you know, so...
I mean, but that is also such a mature way of looking at your business that I don't know if many agents do, you know? They would rather just sit there and complain about the guy who they had to take to see 20 homes and never bought one, you know? Rather than the fortunate, amazing client that they showed one home and he bought it and whatever, you know? And they never talk about that guy, you know? And that's the problem. But yeah, okay. So Steve, you think... we're going to see decoupling of broker to broker. Matt, you think the same? Matt, I want to hear, is there a different prediction that you want to put on the table?
For me, the prediction is kind of that goes along with that is the trend of the buyer to seek out that you know, the listing agent and try to bypass the buyer's agent. I think one of the other things that we're going to see a lot more of is the use of AI. I think that technology is growing. I'll give you one prediction. I don't think the regulators at the state level are going to adjust the laws fast enough to keep up with everything that's going on.
Right.
So NAR is kind of trying to move things, and they're a big ship. But you also have regulatory agencies in each of these states that has their way of doing things, and they've never seen these models, these different things, and it blows their mind. Even the brokerage model, where you have one head broker and everybody else is underneath them, you know, that goes back, you know, 80, 90 years, and that doesn't die easily, you know.
Yeah.
And the possessiveness of, hey, this is my client, and I can't get help from anybody outside of my brokerage. It has to be within my brokerage. A lot of the laws and the rules in various states are very like anti adopt. It's not adopting at the same rate that technology and that is. So I think the one thing that'll hold us back is definitely the regulatory agencies. They're terrible.
Well, I think I have a pretty good feeling that your prediction will be correct when we revisit in a year. You know, I mean, we're already seeing it. Like we talk, you know, I mean, MLSs across the country are doing all these crazy things to adapt to this decision. You know, I mean, look at RE Colorado and I don't know if you guys have been keeping up with the ownership of RE Colorado and the drama that's within that. So it'll be interesting to kind of see how that all shakes out. I mean, coming from the Denver Metro, I feel like RE Colorado has always just kind of been this stalwart to change. And even when we started trying to integrate other MLSs and get more information, it was just the old guard is slow to change. So it's, you know, that adaptation doesn't come easily. I guess if I would say one prediction for me is just I hope and pray that the number of agents goes down. And maybe that's, you know, bad of me to say, but I just encounter so many agents every single week that do not know how to do their job. And it is a burden on the industry, and it is a blight on the profession as a whole. And there is very little that I think that we can do about education for new agents. There's no way that we can change the regulatory bodies on what they need to be teaching people to get a license. But I think it can be incumbent upon brokers and managing brokers to really understand that their people need to know how to do this job before they do it, instead of just being so hungry for a paycheck. You know, I mean, Keller Williams does some things right, they do some things wrong, but I do think that they are the de facto training brokerage in the industry, and that there are some pages of their book that other brokerages can take out of Gary Keller's business plan and implement, and it would serve them so well with their agents, you know. So my prediction is that agent count will continue to decrease. We've already seen a decrease this year by roughly about 2.3%. So I hope to see that continue, and I hope to see people who have found out that outside sales, because that's really what this job is not right for them. And like the entrepreneurial mindset is not for everybody, and that's okay. And there are so many tech startups now that are ancillary services to real estate agents that they can pivot and move into and still be involved in the industry and support agents in a tangible way, because they know what the agents need, but being an agent's just not for them. And that's okay, you know? And maybe the money shouldn't be so easy and flow so freely, you know, to people who are transacting $500,000 homes. Well, that's my take.
I also think your prediction is going to happen as well.
Yeah.
This industry, we have a major and I know people don't like everything that will be said on this podcast, but the agents have a hard time adapting to change. They just don't want to do it in this industry. I see it every day. I see people get mad at me every day for it because we are, and then they look at you as a threat or,
oh yeah,
they want to slash your tires. There is some old guard here. It's clear. I'm pretty vocal about it. But yeah, they're like one of the best examples of, I can add on this really quick. It triggered when you said it earlier, was when the pandemic happened. Like I had the 3D Matterport camera. We were already using it. Was part of our business. But then everybody started doing their 3D tours. Everything started going virtual. We started seeing everybody's houses spin and the dollhouse effect and all this cool technology. And yet, if you go out there now and look at like just a regular MLS, you'll have regular slideshows that are just like just photos, right?
Oh, it's, yeah.
Mostly. They don't, like, I bet you less 5%. I don't even think it's 10%. One out of every 10 listings has some fancy technology. We just don't adapt it. And I honestly thought when the pandemic happened, we all saw it happen. 3 years from now, 90% of all listings would have a Matterport and in this technology. And they don't. The industry doesn't adapt. And so what I think is going to happen is they won't adapt to the AI either. And then those agents who do adapt and get a little edge will have that little edge and they'll keep growing. And then I think it'll just weed out those people naturally. Because I think now the technology is moving so fast that if you don't adapt, it's just going to spit you out. The industry.
Yeah. If you don't try for a couple of years, you're kind of out. And I mean, when we look at the average age of an agent being 56 and, you know, they aren't keeping up with trends, then, you know, I mean, it's going to be a problem for them in a few years.
The consumer's going to demand it. We're used to Amazon. The guy that can figure out how to sell homes the way that you buy Amazon, that's where this is going.
I thought we were so close in Zillow. I really did. So, you know, I mean, it's, yeah.
Super
you know.
App. I think it launched. It did.
You should take a peek at the new Zillow app. I do not work for Zillow, and this podcast is no way sponsored by Zillow, but they do now have premium listings. So, you know, talking about taking so long to roll that out, and now, you know, agents can upgrade their listings to make sure that they have a Matterport, and every one of those includes a floor plan, you know, that Zillow provide those agents for free, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, showcasing the home is still super duper important, but I think more than ever, it's, you know, I don't have MLS access here in Illinois, and I have a friend who's listing her home, and I was like, oh, send me your address. I'd love to kind of like take a peek at the comps and, you know, do my own evaluation of what your home is worth. Do you know how hard that was without MLS? It was so hard. And I'm like sitting here looking at Zillow and Redfin and like kind of trying to figure out comps, and it's just not easy. So Steve, definitely tell me that website that you've got that'll spit out a few different numbers, because I'd be curious. But, you know, well, I know we've kind of been on a little bit longer than the 45 minutes that we had planned, but let me just kind of go back over, you know, I think we had some pretty good discussions around AI and ShowAmi and what we see with buyers brokers in the future. Is there anything else that we left on the table that you wanted to touch in this episode around the change of real estate and what we're kind of seeing and, you know, reinventing real estate for agents?
I don't have anything now. I appreciate Matt being on here so much, especially our first show. Actually, you were the first person we both thought of, and I didn't know Trevor knew you. So it was kind of neat. So I think this is something we probably should revisit every 6 months, because I think it's just going to, like, 6 months from now, we're talking about something.
Well, 6 months from now, everyone's going to have Apple Intelligence on their phone, right? And so they actually will have exposure to ChatGPT instead of everyone telling them to check it out, you know? Then Siri is going to finally be integrated, and then you'll see the massive.
I think that's when it'll really change, when we can, like, just everything. If we can just voicemail a note, add this to my calendar. And I know that's there now, but I think once it gets to the masses and simpler and easier, pretty neat to see.
Oh yeah. It'll be, I mean, there's only one app that I know that does that. So, and it's,
yeah,
I mean, pretty soon Siri will do it, and that'll be so exciting. I mean, Siri is so pointless today. I'm like trying to get her to skip a song, and the music app is all, you know, not working. It was driving me nuts, and I'm like just so over it. And I'm like driving, I can't get my phone, you know, it's like, I just can't stand it. So, well, yes, Matt, we really, really appreciate you coming on for our first episode. And for all the listeners, if you made it to the end of the episode, thank you. Sorry if it was rough for our first one, but stick with us. I'm sure we'll be better, more streamlined, you know, with each and every episode. But thank you, Matt. We really appreciate it. If anybody wants to check out ShowAmi further, definitely check him out. ShowAmi.com, ShowAmi. Free to sign up. Take a peek at it. Otherwise, we will see you all soon. Thank you so much.
So that's a wrap for episode one of Reinvented the Agent Lounge. Thanks for listening. We appreciate you being part of this conversation. And this is just the beginning. At the Agent Lounge, we focus on real estate, innovation, and strategy, redefining success in an industry that's constantly evolving. If that resonates with you, Visit agentloungepod.com to get updates on all our new episodes. We're also sharing insights, expert perspectives, and short form content on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and TikTok. Just search at Agent Lounge Podcast and follow along. And if you're building something in prop tech or you're an agent leading change in your business, we'd love to hear your story. Reach out at Trevor@becomeamodernagent.com. Let's talk. Thanks again for joining us. Keep innovating, keep adapting, and keep redefining real estate success. We'll see you in the Agent Lounge.